We discussed just before the break the idea that there could be a mileage tax. This is something that Bruce Rauner is saying J.B. Pritzker wants to levy on you. The government will know where you're traveling, and they're going to tax you wherever you go. That's the tone of the ad. It's not true. It's an attack ad. Rauner's losing, and he's throwing this against the wall. Maybe it'll work. Why can't they all just close their ads with, I'm Kwame Raoul, and this is the work of my life? Every time I hear that, I run out and vote for him. But the question is, isn't it fair if the tax is not how much gas you buy, but how far you travel? Now, some of you travel a lot, and this would hit you in the shorts big time.
Well, but you're already being hit in the shorts big time if you're
buying a lot of gas.
Right.
And the only way this works is if you eliminate the gas tax and then charge everybody how much they drive.
I don't know what they've done elsewhere. I do think they've done it in Oregon. Do you know? You've read more about this than me, it looks like.
I don't know what's happened in Oregon.
I'm sure it would offset the gas tax. I don't know if they would get rid of it altogether, but if it...
Well, somebody said, but what about electric cars? And electric cars would then start paying. But the point is that one of the incentives we give to people to buy electric cars and stop burning fossil fuels is to say, okay, then you won't have to pay the tax.
No, that's not the incentive. The incentive is you don't have to buy gas.
Well, then pay the gas tax at the pump, right?
So the break is you don't have to spend as much on fuel. The break shouldn't be, and subsequently you don't have to pay your fair share to keep the roads up.
I guess so, but that's what happens. So a couple of you have said, or just record the mileage each year at the DMV when you get your new sticker. So when you go to get your new sticker, they say, what did you have last year? What do you have this year? We'll take the miles you drove. You drove 20,000 miles, and then you owe us $275 or something. There could be ways to record how much you drive a year and then tax you accordingly.
Then that would be what? Avoiding then the transponder in your car?
Right, I guess that would be one way to do it. Although, I don't know, a transponder in the car doesn't seem to be that deep.
A lot of us have them now.
I know. They know when you go through the tolls. You know, here's the thing. They could do this tomorrow. I'm a little surprised they don't. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune, just strolled into our studio. Hi, Phil.
Hi, John.
So here's what they could do on the tolls. When you go through one and you pay, and then you go through another one and you pay, they know how long you've been on the road in between the 2 points.
They could give you a speeding ticket.
I don't know why they just don't go ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
Because there are pitchforks still in this world and we'd use them.
I don't know why they still haven't gone to off-peak hour pricing on certain tolls.
Yeah.
That's certainly a capability.
But that works both ways. Yep. I mean, you're selling it as though, guess what? When not many people are on the cars, the cost will be less.
Right.
When not many cars are on the road, the cost will be less. But when that thing is jammed, then you're going to pay more, right?
Right, or you pay the full amount. So you pay more to sit in traffic.
Or what about high occupancy vehicle lanes? That is on the left hand side.
That's right.
There's a wide open lane,
right?
And it costs extra to go there.
Right. Well, they're talking about that. I think they are going to do that.
They have that in Minnesota. You'll have four lanes of traffic. The first three on the right, jammed. The one on the left, nobody's in it, because if you go in there and they catch you without a transponder, then you'll get a ticket.
Or without enough people in the car.
Yes. So sometimes people have dummies or something like that.
Inflatable buddies.
They do.
Been a whole new revenue stream for the inflatable person industry.
I got to mention this, and then you got to talk to us, sir. An encounter with Teddy Roosevelt and me, John Williams, is going to be November the 10th, right after the next election. Teddy Roosevelt strolls onto the stage and talks about leadership. TR is coming back. It's going to be at Elgin Community College. We were there for the last two shows ago. It went swell up there. We're only going to do one show. This show will sell out, and some of you will not be able to go. I'm sorry about that. That's the way we're doing it this time. There will be one show only, and you can get your tickets right now by going to WGNradio.com/events. The show is Saturday, November 10th at 10:30 in the morning. You're not real busy at 10:30 in the morning on a Saturday in November. You will be able to go to the show and still catch some of the games. The Sunday games will be the next day. I think this is going to be a home run. And Teddy Roosevelt's on the stage. Tickets at WGNradio.com/events right now. Or call the Blizzard Theater box office. That's the theater at Elgin. 847-622-0300. 847-622-0300. Our event is sponsored by American Sale. 847-622-0300. WGNradio.com/events. TR, go there right now. Do you think that this hotel worker tax, a strike in town, is going to have much impact on your side of the ledger, the restaurant business?
Probably not my side, because the hotel restaurants I tend to cover are independent restaurants that happen to be leasing space in a hotel. Consequently, their employees are not in the union. Consequently, they're not out on strike. There are exceptions, and there are a number of restaurants in hotels that have had to greatly curtail service or limited hours, limited menu, because they are really short on employees. So I think we're all hoping for a quick and happy resolution to this.
Well, we haven't had a quick one. Hopefully it'll be a happy one, and sooner than later, for the workers alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the fair resolution is, but I understand their desire for year-round health coverage.
Oh, sure. I want it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, really, because, and I'll tell you what, anytime you've been to a hotel and you're happily skipping down the hall, heading out of town or checking in, and you see those people pushing that cart, do you not just thank your lucky stars that you're not that person,
right,
and you're the person you are in that scene?
Mm-hmm. It never occurred to me that I have to, like, contemplate a situation where I couldn't get sick in November, but April would be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Hold off on that doctor visit.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard for hotels to have successful restaurants themselves, isn't it? Or for it to attract a local audience. I've seen them market those. I've seen them try. I can't think of many people who say, hey, let's go to the Hilton for dinner tonight.
Mm-hmm. That not used to, you know, 20 years ago, people did do that. But they're labor intensive, for one thing. They're very happy to have hotel service so they get what they call the capture rate, which is the percentage of actual guests that eat in the restaurant, because you've got them right there. So capture them. And breakfast, huge capture rate. Dinner, not so much. Even in nice hotels, a lot of people prefer just to get out of the building and go somewhere else.
You're
for dinner.
You're in that city. You want to go there for dinner.
Right. And they have they have advantages in that they have their own laundry built in, so they're not outsourcing their tablecloths, and they have all the silverware and dishes they need anyway because they have banquet service, and they're not paying the same traditional rent, so the definition of profitability is different.
Right, but if there was a Ditka's attached to a Harry Caray's attached to a hotel,
which there are,
they might actually be doing pretty well, because maybe room service isn't so good right now in the hotel. People might be inclined to go to the attached restaurants.
Room service is non-existent in some of these hotels.
Yeah.
So they are going to those restaurants. At the JW Marriott, they have one independent restaurant called Florentine, and the person there told me that they are slightly busier now because within the confines of the restaurant, they're the only game in town food-wise.
Here's your review. Review, life is a pig picnic at down-to-earth Etta Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
What's Etta Restaurant?
Etta is short for Henrietta, which in France is the keeper of the hearth, which, of course, we all know that. And that's where they named it. And so, as the name suggests, mostly open hearth cooking. And Danny Grant, who is also Maple and Ashes head chef, the Gold Coast Steakhouse, he heads this one up, and it's kind of much more approachable food, not so steak-heavy, but still they have very, very meat-centric, as shown by this pig picnic, which is this big board of pork shoulder and some pork belly, and the belly has been slow-cooked, and then they crisp it up in a pan before you get the dish. So and then it comes with all these different condiments you can add, and you can either tuck them into lettuce.
Just like a charcuterie you're describing?
No, because it's all shredded. It's like pork belly you'd get in at a barbecue place, except doesn't have the barbecue seasoning.
Is it served as like a pizza, or how do they serve it?
It's on a big board, and you have these slices of pork shoulder to the left, and you have the fried pig belly, pork belly in the right, and then in separate dishes, there are various condiments, and there.
Well, that does sound like a charcuterie to me, where they bring out a plate or a board, and you
right.
kind of just gnaw on all the stuff that's
there.
Well,
that's true. When I think of charcuterie, though, I think of, you know, strictly cured meats, not cooked meats, and in slices, and you add your dab of mustard, and you
right.
eat that way.
Yeah. So this is a meal you're describing.
Oh, it's a meal for at least three people. it's a big old thing.
But then do you get a side? Do you get some fries or a salad with that?
No, what you get is you get some bread and cucumbers and into some yogurt and cherry tomatoes and chimichurri sauce.
And how are you consuming it then? With a fork, or are you putting it in like a pita bread or on a roll?
You can put it in a bread. They also have big lettuce leaves, so you can wrap it up.
Oh, nice.
And wrap it up as a lettuce bite. And then, yeah, you can just go at it with your fork and knife and just... Yeah, I think that's why he calls it a picnic.
Obviously a shared dish, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just it takes up the whole... It takes up a big portion of the table.
So is that what you do when you go to Etta? That's the way to do Etta?
That is the one dish you must have. And there are some full-size entrees if you like to have your own dish, and I certainly understand that. And I did that on subsequent visits. But first visit, you get a couple of opening courses, and then get into that pig picnic.
But you also described their pastas and their pizzas in your review,
Pizza is particularly strong there. They have...
Is it a thin crust?
Yeah, but more of a puffy-edged crust, you know, kind of... You know, it's got a nice chew to it, but you couldn't strictly call it Neapolitan style, and you couldn't call it. It's just their pizza.
Not a deep dish, yeah, right.
But they have something called a fire pie, which has their own version of giardiniera on it, and it's got a pretty good spicy kick to it, and it comes back to the days when that chef was working at Ria, and on Wednesday nights, a nearby pizzeria called Pisano's has had an industry night where they gave out free slices of pizza and all you did is drink. And they did, and so his crew did that every Wednesday to the point where they started custom ordering how they wanted their pizza, and they started making it, and it called, because they like so much spice, they called it the fire pie. And now that dish, which started off as an industry night freebie at Pisano's, is on their menu.
Etta's pizzas are slightly participatory, writes Phil Patel. What do you mean by that?
Because they serve it in the traditional Chicago style. They serve it on a little wire platform, so it's raised up above, so it's closer to eye level. Well, my eye level anyway. and then underneath there are shakers of they have the Parmesan. They've got the garlic. They've got their own flex, giardiniera. All these little things you can add in there, including a special mix of seasonings that the chef does for himself, and it's just there. He called it, it's all called Pizza Box because it's all the stuff he likes to throw on top of a pizza.
You like this place, didn't you?
I do. It's a lot of fun. It's very, very, very casual and unassuming, and it's got a nice second floor with an open area so they can do their outdoor cafe thing, which, of course, everybody in Chicago loves.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, if you can eat outdoors in Chicago, you should. Mm-hmm. 1840 West North. 1840. West North Avenue in Chicago, Etta Restaurant. EttaRestaurant.com is their website. Another quick question for you, Phil. Mm-hmm. In a minute, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune's here. This is WGN. Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. His latest review on North Avenue in Chicago is of Etta, and he gives it
3 stars.
3 out of 4. You do not throw threes around readily. That's nice. And the prices are $14, $15 to $40, but that doesn't sound too bad if you're ordering down on the menu a little.
No. Even the pig picnic is at $52, but it's enough for 3 people at least.
Uh-oh, but here's the end of your review. Noise level. Conversation challenged.
Yeah, it's loud. It's one big open space.
I'm not
and
there.
People
I'm not there.
Are...
I'm not there.
And people are... They tend to, in the nights I've been there, there's always been a group. There's always been 14 people that know each other, decided to eat that day, and they're taking up a few tables near to each other, and then you add a couple of bottles of wine, and the volume goes up.
Somebody says something funny, and there's a lady, and she goes, wah!
Right. Somebody says something not funny, and she goes,
ah! Phil, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I was at a place last weekend that I really became absolutely agitated. I had to leave. I was so bothered. And part of it was that it was really dark. And it wasn't just that it was dark. I mean, it was daylight outside, so they tried to make it dark inside.
Yeah.
And I know, getting old and reading and all of that. But someone then said, yeah, that really has gone away, that the idea of a dark restaurant is sort of disappearing. Is that true?
I'd say so. I'd say if you're a place that had a very low light level, you're in a place that's at least 20 years old.
But I see people using their phone flashlights
to
read menus.
Yeah.
If I was the owner or manager of a restaurant, that would bother me.
Right.
You should not have to do that.
And then you go to some other restaurants and it's, is this an operating theater? Is there going to be surgery done? You know, I don't want it too bright and I don't want it subterranean.
Yeah, I get the, you know, sometimes you have to use your phone and stuff. That, you know, that's just the way it is. But this place, right, the phone light really wouldn't have helped that much. I mean, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So you find your way out of there by, like, there's a guide there.
It turned out it was sort of rude. I thought dinner should have ended for the group of us, so I just kind of stood up.
Uh-huh.
When we left at the end, yeah.
I hate that scene where everybody's done and there's this, and we're done, but nobody wants to be the first person to say, let's leave now. And I'll do that. I stand up and I go, and then I'll stand there for a while. And if you don't want to leave, that's fine, but I'm at least standing up. I cannot sit here any longer.
I say, shall we? And then, I stands up, y'all, and then we're.
But then three ladies look at me and go, "Yeah, no, we're good. We're going to sit here and
we're going to sit here." You know, it's like, this is only my fourth cup of coffee. There's no rush now.
I want to go out with you guys because that is the worst thing.
Us old men.
Oh, brother!
I know. It's
leave my brother out of this.
Part of it is a youth thing, and I get that. But
I'm going to have another cup of decaf coffee.
Or how many
wine? I mean, really, it's alcohol is fueling this.
Right. And after 2 o'clock, after it's the second cup of coffee, I think you should probably give that table back to the restaurant.
But it's also the lost or never learned ability to behave in public. You can have a great time if you are laughing at the top of your lungs. And somebody else is eating next to you, and they're not laughing with you, then you need to be a little quieter now.
Right. Phil hit on, that's what I always do, Phil. I'm like, well, you know, I really think there's people waiting for this table.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We should get going.
Yeah.
So, as a courtesy.
I'm okay to leave if you offer to go somewhere else.
Okay. Sure. Good. Let's do that. And then we don't even have to go somewhere else, but at least that mobilizes us.
Right. A nice place where you can stand up and have that coffee or sit at the bar and have coffee.
In. Hey, John and Phil, you should check out the new Burmese restaurant on Geneva Road in Wheaton. Pa Lian is owned by a Burmese refugee. It's one of the few Burmese restaurants in the United States, and the food is very good. Geneva Road, Wheaton, Pa Lian. Okay, thanks for that, 630. And Phil, as always, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
We are out of it. It's, well, shall we?
Shall we?
That's our Phil Vitale. He's yours, too. Read him in the Chicago Tribune in print and online, chicagotribune.com/dining.